I'm Doug Brown, and this is my second talk this week on homeopathic medicine. And last night, I know many of you were here, last night we looked at some of the philosophical foundations of homeopathy, its history, where the philosophical tradition that it came from. We talked a lot about individualization and the importance of treating not just the disease, but the individual. And this is really, really key in treating chronic disease. And for me, the power of homeopathy is actually in treating chronic disease, chronic illness, which allopathic or more conventional medicine generally is unable to cure. It's able to manage sometimes, able to help control symptoms, but often not able to cure. Homeopathy can sometimes cure chronic diseases with a very carefully individualized approach. And we talked a lot about philosophy yesterday, and some of it got a bit esoteric and abstract. Today, it's going to be very practical information about first aid. How can homeopathy help in a first aid situation? And what I'd like to do is introduce you to a number of homeopathic remedies. And for me, it's a little bit like introducing old friends, because homeopathic remedies, unlike conventional medicines, they have similarities to them. You know, it's a little bit like angels. I don't know how many of you believe in angels, but angels, if they aren't among us, they're not all the same. They have personalities, and they have different skill sets, and they want to step in and help in certain kinds of situations. Remedies are a little bit like that. So I want to introduce them to you almost as if they're people, as if they're personalities. And because when one is asking to help, the person that is needing that help is going to actually manifest certain personality or certain emotional characteristics that, along with the first aid situation, will point you in that particular remedy's direction. Well, that may sound rather strange right now, but as we go through these remedies, I think you'll see what I mean when I talk about certain proclivities or tendencies of the patient who needs a particular kind of remedy. So with that, let's start with, I just wanted to show you what one first aid kit might look like. And at the end of this slideshow, I'll give you some websites where you can order your own first aid kit. I was trying to find a first aid kit, my first aid kit that I could show you, and I realized at the last moment I was rummaging through closets that I left all my first aid kits in Haiti, where I've been a couple of times this past year, but here's one kit. It's not exactly a first aid kit, but you might get a kit from something like this. You open it up, and you'll get all of these vials, and with a table telling you what is in each little container.
And take that across the border, do you?
So far, so good. I haven't lost anything yet that way. So anyway, there's a variety of different first aid kits, and we'll talk a little bit at the end about potency, that is strength, what you might want to have on hand. But the first friend I want to introduce you to, or angel, or remedy, is Arnica Montana. And that's a picture of it. And Arnica Montana has brought many, many people into homeopathy in a way, because we talk so much again about individualization. Arnica is one of those remedies that, in an acute trauma kind of situation, will often work. You don't often have to individualize very much. Arnica is one of these kind of all-around friends that, if you have a traumatic, urgent wounding or bruising or a crushing injury, Arnica is going to be able to help you in many of these situations. So that's what I want to talk about, is what are the situations where you might consider using Arnica. It's the most commonly used first aid homeopathic remedy. Anytime you have an acute situation where there's bruising with tenderness, and now we're going to get that second thing, don't want to be touched. This is sort of the peculiar personality thing about that. Someone who really will benefit from Arnica, if you ask them, do you want me to rub that, they'll say no. Don't touch. Please don't touch me. There's a feeling in the energy pattern of I've been hurt by something external and I don't want anything else to touch me. And that becomes kind of a little bit of, and even in that urgent situation, if it's it's just an acute situation and not somebody's constitutional remedy. But you'll see the person saying, no, I'm okay, I don't have to see the doctor, I don't know, don't touch me, I'm fine. But they're kind of dazed, and they're clearly hurting, right? So that's an indicator that arnica is actually exactly what is needed. They tend to understate the injury in order to avoid, it's coming from a place of don't touch me, I don't want to be examined. So they might understate the degree of pain and bruising and soreness they're feeling. So we most often think of arnica when there's an external cause. You know, you get, you're in a car crash, your head hits the windshield, you fall, gravity hurts you literally. But it can also come from overexertion. Lifting a lot of wood and you hurt your back, or
hiking to Holden Lake?
Hiking to Holden Lake, participating in an athletic competition are common situations where arnica might be needed. Giving labor, which is the most athletically demanding thing humans can do, giving birth, is a very common scenario where arnica is so helpful to the mother right after giving birth. And of course, there's often a lot of bruising around the labia, say with a vaginal birth. So arnica is often needed right then. Again, the person who needs arnica is worse touched. They don't want to be touched. And they generally don't want to move, will feel worse with movement. An obvious example would be a sprained ankle. A sprained ankle is with bruising and swelling is a great opportunity to call on your friend arnica to help, and they don't want to move. There's a kind of, as I said, a dazed feeling and often a feeling of bruised all over. Somebody who needs arnica might say the bed is feeling too hard. This bed, it never felt so hard before. That's from that inner sense of bruising and injury. So that's what your vial of arnica might look like if you get, we're going to talk again about potencies at the end, but this is a 30C potency vial. You'll see the pellets there. If your pellets come in that size, maybe three of those would be a dose of 30C. And what's very, what I find very helpful is arnica in a lotion. I'm going to pass this around, and this is actually calendula, so I won't pass this around. I'm going to pass this around. You can get arnica in a little jar in a lotion form. Often in stores, you'll find it in something, sorry, this is sort of crumpled up, it's something like this. And that's very helpful. If it's very localized bruising, local inflammation, if you want to just rub it on a single part, especially if, say, you happen to be under constitutional homeopathic care, you're on some other remedy, your homeopath has told you don't take any other remedies because you're on this one, but you sprained your wrist, right? And so rather than taking arnica internally, you can rub arnica lotion or cream on your wrist. It wouldn't interfere with the constitutional treatment if taken in that way.
So this is something that I would use in place of ibuprofen?
Yes.
Huh.
Right. Yeah, and one very interesting comparison with ibuprofen can work wonders, as you know, but you'll notice if the arnica does resonate with you, you'll notice an effect much more quickly. You know, in 5 minutes, you'll feel considerably better with something like arnica.
Just to let you know,
yes.
The jammed finger that I had today,
yes.
The inflammation, I had jammed this finger a month ago, but doing the wood, lifting the wood and all
yeah.
just exacerbated it. And inflammation came, but when you put the arnica on it, the inflammation went down.
Great. And how long did it take before you felt the change?
I don't know, because I took a nap.
Well, what I remember is that you said it felt better immediately. I've noticed that too.
It was soothing.
I was out working, I think on my sailboat or something with a hammer, I think I hit my finger. And I just, you know how painful it is if you hit your thumb or your finger with a hammer. I immediately put some tincture of arnica in a glass of water. I stuck my finger in it, and instantly the pain went away. It was magic. It really can be kind of a magical thing.
So can you take arnica internally
yes.
too? And that's for those who are suffering from trauma?
If it's more of a generalized, you know, you've hiked all day, you've given labor, you've given birth rather, or you know, your whole back is sore, then I would take it if you're not on another.
But you don't need a prescription, or
no.
you do?
You don't.
Or any of the homeopathic.
You don't. Now, there's some variation state by state. Most states, you can get up to 30 C potencies without any prescriptions. Some states, you cannot get higher than 30 C without a homeopath or. And 30 C is a perfectly good potency to have on hand.
You can take too much.
Can you take too much?
Can you take too much?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. You can't really take too much at one time, unlike, say, conventional medicine, because the body really is not responding so much to the amount of, say, pellets you take. It's really responding to just the presence of the energy and the potency level. But if you take it for prolonged periods of time, it can be too much. And the way in which it's too much, it's not that you're going to get toxic effects from the arnica, but rather, as the arnica type situation goes into the past, your vital force is going to begin to express more and more of its own shape, its own energy. And that's going to call more for your own constitutional remedy. And if you keep taking arnica, your vital force is going to keep saying back to it, no, not you, not X, Y. And with Y, the Y symptoms are going to be those symptoms that don't resonate with arnica. So you may have chronic symptoms that then will get stronger and more forceful because you're taking a remedy that doesn't quite resonate with your deepest self. So I would only take it as long as that particular bruise or that particular injury is sort of up in your mind. You know how when you bruise, say you've gone to Holden Lake and you're out of shape and you come back and you're in this sort of arnica state, right? You're going to feel that for the next couple of days. But a week later, you're not going to be feeling it. So you don't want to be continuing to take it. And only as long as that feeling of bruise and sore is in your mind, in your consciousness, in your body. Okay. Any head injury, arnica, it's not the only remedy for head injuries, but it's the first, in terms of percentage-wise, it's going to cover more instances of head injury than any other remedy. So give it right away. Anytime, ecchymosis is the medically fancy word for bruising, anytime you see blue-green bruising under the skin, or hematoma, collection of blood under the skin, that's where arnica is going to be very useful. First remedy for ankle sprains, wrist sprains, shoulder sprains, any kind of overexertion. Okay, so that's a very important remedy, arnica. Another very important remedy in a first aid situation is monkshood, or aconitum napellus, to use the Latin, as we homeopaths like to do. The main thing, in some ways it's similar to arnica, in that it's a remedy for sudden shock. The key aspect of aconitum is that there's a tremendous anxiety. There's a tremendous feeling, conviction even, that death is imminent. And rather than having this dazed, dull feeling, as with arnica, you're going to have a state of hypervigilance. So there's a lot of restlessness with fear. The skin tends to be hot and dry. Do you see what I mean about remedies having a kind of personality? It's so strange, right? And talking about medicine is as if the medicine has hot skin, hot, dry skin, or the medicine has restlessness, but this is the way, once you've been doing homeopathy for a while, you start talking as if these medicines have personalities. That's how we recognize the need for them. And aconite is a really important remedy when there's a kind of natural disaster with a lot of fear and terror. I went to Haiti twice within the last couple of years to both treat patients in tent cities and slum neighborhoods and also to teach. And I was amazed at how even 2 years after the earthquake, many people were still in an aconite state. And it was particularly true, interestingly, me, up in the mountains. I spent a couple of days certain people in very poor villages above Port-au-Prince in the mountains. And I noticed a very interesting pattern. Many of the adults who I treated exhibited an aconitum state primarily at the mental and the emotional level. There was so much post-traumatic stress disorder from the earthquake. People were very scared to sleep in their houses at night. They were having terrible nightmares, terrible flashbacks of the earthquake, of loss of their loved ones, and a tremendous state of hypervigilance, not able to sleep, tachycardia, rapid heart rate, a lot of anxiety. Aconitum worked just wonders, even 2 years after the earthquake. On the other hand, their children, the really little ones, the parents were bringing the kids to me for high fevers that they said were caused by the cold mountain air. Now, I was so happy when I was in Haiti to be up in the mountains, because in Port-au-Prince it was suffocatingly hot. It was up in the mountains and it was cool. It was a little bit cooler, there was a cool breeze. But for them, the cool breeze meant chill and fever, pneumonia, and they brought so many little children to me with the complaint that every time the evening wind comes, they would get a cold, they would get sick, they would get a fever. And this is also a common first aid reason for using aconitum, when there's an exposure to a cold mountain wind and there's a feeling of I'm going to die from this pneumonia I'm catching or a fever. So at the physical level and the emotional level, we see it come together in aconitum in this way. It's also a great remedy when there's a burn to the eyes, because it's such a shocking experience and there's a feeling of terror associated with it. So that's aconitum. Any questions about either aconitum or arnica?
Yeah, I do.
Great.
Well, just in general, when I'm always kind of confused when I read the stuff that comes with homeopathic. And we had like a children kit.
Yes.
When Sophie was little, and it's just, you know, it's like I'd look at the symptoms and I'd say, okay, maybe that one, definitely not that one. But, you know, it seemed so specific that it felt half the time that I couldn't take any, you know, or I couldn't give her any because I wasn't, you know, it's like you can be anxious without being, you know, anticipating death, or without, you know, it's like not everybody who has exposure to mountain air and has a fever is also hypervigilant, you know what I mean? So there's a part of it that it kind of confuses me.
Yeah.
Because there's so many, there aren't that many remedies that I know of, or at least not the basic ones, but they seem to like cover everything, and then things like, yeah, anyway, it's confusing.
It is very confusing, I agree. I totally agree with you. And as someone who uses homeopathy, if you're somebody that uses homeopathy very infrequently, just in an emergency situation, you're not going to gain enough experience to be able to make those fine distinctions. Mm-hmm. And so the key thing really to remember is, if you come down with a cold, you're not going to really be able to use what I'm sharing with you today to make differentiations. What I'm presenting here is really for more urgent or emergent situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question. So what if you... What if you get confused and you use the wrong one? Is there going to be, like, if I use, instead of arnica, I use this?
Nothing would happen.
Nothing bad?
Nothing bad. Hmm. Nothing bad. The remedy, if it doesn't resonate, it sort of goes right over the patient. It's like, oh, there's no resonance, there's no way to energetically connect, so there's no effect. Huh. Now, if you keep giving the wrong remedy over and over and over again over the course of weeks or months or days, then you can start having some problems. But getting one or two or three or four doses and there's no response. You know, for example, if someone is in a severe head injury, I mean, the first thing I would do is give arnica, and if there's no response, I would give arnica again. And give it in a different potency and give it again. I might give it over several hours. And then only after several hours of varying potencies, if there was no effect, only then would I switch to a different remedy. So it would do no harm, I repeat.
And how do you know what dose to give?
Great question, and we'll talk more about that at the end. But the quick answer is it depends on the intensity of the symptoms, on the intensity of the shock or the situation. So in a low intensity, you know, I stub my toe, ow, I know it's going to get better, but you know, I'd like some relief right away, maybe a 30C. If you're in an auto accident, or you witness an auto accident, and somebody's in a coma, go to something like 10M. So we'll talk about that at the end. And I know that most of you are not going to be having multiple kinds of potencies on you. You may only have a 30C kit. In that case, just give what you have. But we can talk more about potency at the end. Yes.
But in the meantime, sorry,
go ahead, Brian.
But in the meantime, the ambulance is going to show
yes.
up and they're going to take over.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Okay. And one of the great things about conventional medicine is trauma care. I am so glad that conventional medicine has evolved these amazing life-saving technologies and skills. And I certainly wouldn't want anybody to keep me out of a trauma center if I was in a trauma. But I'm also hoping that somebody might give me the right remedy on the way, because that'll really help a lot. So.
I have a question.
Yes.
It actually relates to that, but that you mentioned that with like ambulances and so forth. With,
yes.
Are you describing shock as a little bit more broader sense than if like the type of shock
yes,
your body
you
might go into when your leg gets cut off,
yes.
if your blood pressure drops,
yes.
and your body's trying to compensate?
Yeah, yes, thank you for that clarification.
Okay.
I'm speaking of shock a bit more broadly than that more technical definition of shock where blood pressure drops.
That helps me understand.
Thank you. And that also, I should say too, that none of what I'm saying should be construed as saying you don't do the normal sort of first aid things. You know, check airway, check pulse, call 911. If there's loss of blood, elevate the lower extremities. All those things apply. This is in addition to that. So we have a remedy made from a bee, and we call it Apis mellifica. And it's a wonderful remedy for bee stings. But anytime you have hives, the medical word being urticaria, anytime you have raised wheals on the skin with redness and itching, if it's associated with swelling, and again, one of these sort of personality things about Apis, when Apis is needed, when Apis can step in and really be of help, is if somebody tries to apply heat to it, like a hot pack, it will really be uncomfortable. Because somebody who needs Apis will want a cold pack or ice on the affected area. So it's great when there's jellyfish stings, bee stings. If you have an anaphylactic, a really severe allergic reaction to something, Apis is the first remedy to try. Patient may say the pain feels like hot needles, which cause a kind of crying out. Really very useful remedy to have.
Works for horse fly bites?
Yeah, it does. Again, especially if it's better cold application, Apis is going to help a lot.
And all of these are oral?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Apis is not so commonly, I don't know if Apis is available so much topically. Better off taking Apis as a oral, as a pellet.
I think you do have Apis in
that
topical setting.
Can I have
this? Yeah.
Okay, I stand corrected. I know that the next remedy, which is also great for bites, Ledum, is available topically. I have some right here. If anybody has an itching mosquito bite and wants to try just a little bit of this lotion, I'll pass this around. So Ledum and Apis have to be, in a way, Ledum and Apis and Hypericum to some extent, which we're going to talk about next, have to be able to distinguish among them from each other, just like you have to be able to recognize certain friends that have different color hair, or different timbre of voice, or different personalities. So, we talked about Apis as being great for bites and stings, but Ledum is also great for puncture wounds. Nails, you step on a nail, Ledum is the first actually remedy to think of. Ledum has been documented to prevent tetanus. So it's a great emergency remedy in that sense. So Ledum is good when there are nerve injuries with shooting pains. Also, it's been shown to be really helpful when there's a bruise to the orbits of the eyes, when there's black eyes. And a difference between Ledum and Apis is that the affected part, say your foot where you stepped on that nail, it will feel cold. Whereas with Apis, it will usually feel to the person, the affected person will feel hot. But both, the confusing thing is that both Apis both the person who needs APIS and both the person as well as the person who needs LEADM will be feel better with cold. But it's more peculiar with LEADM because the patient who needs LEADM, the part will feel cold, but they will also want cold application. So that will point you more towards LEADM.
Okay, Doug?
Yes.
So what if you have, you know, what if you step on a nail but it doesn't feel cold, so is LEADM?
You could still give, I would still give LEADM. Okay. Thank you. That's a great question. If it doesn't feel cold, as long as it's not feeling hot, if it's feeling hot, I would look for something else, some other indicator, maybe hypericum, or maybe APIS. But if there's no other sort of particularizing characteristics of the person, nothing else that they can say, if all they tell you is they stepped on a nail, that's all, then I would give LEADM first thing.
So many questions. Yeah. So a couple of years ago, I got Lyme disease. I got a tick bite. It turned into the bullseye pattern, et cetera. Luckily, it did, so then I went to the doctor. But I didn't, I just thought it was a spider bite. And we got, no big deal. So prevent Lyme disease, that means that when I saw this bite, if I didn't know it was a tick bite, I could have rubbed it on and forget the antibiotics that the doctor gave me? Or would you recommend both? And it would just maybe make the antibiotic, I mean, since they're different systems.
Yeah, great.
Because that's
great,
a really severe one if it doesn't get cured.
All right. I think if you had taken LEADM internally, you wouldn't have developed Lyme disease.
Okay.
That's what
so
I
had
would
have
done. If I had a tick bite and I knew it was a tick, and it was an area where Lyme disease was prevalent, I would take LEADM. I would take a 30C of LEADM, and I'm sure I wouldn't get Lyme disease.
Okay.
Cool. One dose or?
I might take it if I was in an area where it was, I was in Connecticut, somewhere where it was really endemic, I would probably take it twice a day for 3 days. If I was in an area where it was relatively rare, I might just take a single dose.
Okay, so I'm going to sound skeptical, but I'm going to say it this way.
Yeah.
So if I get a tick bite, and I would take LEADM, the essence of LEADM would affect the spirit of my body and convince my body that I shouldn't have Lyme's disease. My body is going to deal with this. My
That's
body
right.
is going to take care of that problem.
That's right, because it sort of directs your vital force. Putting it in really concrete ways, it tells your immune system, watch out, there's been a break in the skin. Take care of any problem that might happen. It's sort of like a...
It primes your body.
It's like a flagman on the highway. It says, here's the danger. This is where you need to direct your resources in the immune system. And we'll take care of it at that point. At that point. So hypericum, which we know as St. John's wort, naturopathically it's used as an antidepressant, right? And homeopathy is really quite different. Hypericum also has to do with injuries, and particularly injuries to the nerves. So injuries to nerve-rich areas, such as fingers, toes, genitals, if there's a lot of nerve pain, it's a bit more specific than just blunt trauma pain, bruising, but more nerve pain, hypericum is going to be the angel that can step in, the friend that can really, really help a lot. If there's a spinal cord injury, automobile accident, sense maybe there's some paralysis, hypericum would be the remedy to give. Or just a simple, you know, it's winter and there's snow on your stairs or ice on your stairs and you slip and you fall and you hit your tailbone really severely, hypericum is a great remedy for that. It's also a great remedy after birthing when the bruising is particularly felt right around the tailbone. It's a great remedy for root canal pain, again, because of the nerve quality, the neuropathic pain. Or when there's perioperative nerve pain, like LEADM and like APIS, it's a great remedy for bites. When would you give hypericum as opposed to, say, LEADM?
Okay.
if the bite was on your finger, or toes, or genital, neuropathic pain, like.
Right, nerve pain, a lot of pain, right? A more severe pain.
What about sciatica or something like that?
You know, sciatica is more of a chronic problem, generally. I mean, if it's immediate sciatica following a fall, yes, then hypericum would be indicated. If it's sciatica that's been developing over the course of weeks and months, hypericum is not, you're going to need more of a constitutional remedy. So, again, we were just looking at sort of the response to the shock of injury. We talked about arnica having what kind of response? Remember arnica?
Dazed.
Dazed, good. What kind of response would aconitum have?
Sure, hypervigilance.
Exactly, hypervigilance, I'm going to die. Here we see that hypericum may have more of a floaty kind of feeling, kind of a drugged out feeling. Another way you might recognize, but it doesn't have to be there. If you see an injury to a nerve-rich area with a lot of pain, start with hypericum. And a keynote for hypericum is that the wounds seem to be more tender than the appearance of the injury may suggest. They may be a kind of out of proportion reaction.
It's a terrible picture.
It's a terrible picture. I don't know why I took that. Pain in old scars also can respond to hypericum.
So does this relate at all to things like arthritis? Like it's a nerve kind of?
You know, if it's a so arthritis again is a chronic condition, and if someone were to come to me with this chronic case, and I was going into their whole story, and everything really came down to an experience of life being this tremendous pain, especially this nerve pain, then hypericum might be their constitutional remedy, in which case hypericum would then cure the arthritis. But I've treated many, many people with arthritis, and I have yet to have anybody need hypericum as their chronic constitutional remedy. I can imagine it. Some people it is, but I haven't had yet that case. So, we're going to do our second bug. Cantharis, the Spanish fly, is a great remedy for severe burns. And here we're talking about second and third degree burns. It can also be, you know, actually, we know that with full thickness burns, say a third degree burn or fourth degree burn where the burn goes completely through the skin, actually that tends to be paradoxically painless. It's sometimes the first degree burns that are the most painful. But when there's, and cantharis really is indicated when there's a lot of pain. So this may be a little inaccurate by saying second and third degree burns, it may be more first and second degree burns. Think of it whenever there's a lot of severe burning pain. With restlessness and irritation. And the pain may be so great there's a kind of violence and delirium associated with it. Pains are cutting and they are usually accompanied by intense thirst. And another acute situation that cantharis can be really helpful is with urinary tract infections. And it tends not to work when it's more of a kind of a run-of-the-mill cystitis, a little irritation, have to go to the bathroom more frequently. What a bummer that I have this now, you know, it's so inconvenient. It's not, that's not the urinary tract infection that cantharis is going to resonate with. It's going to resonate with this really intense, intolerable urging towards urination and a kind of furious burning cutting pain in the urethra, both before, during, and after the act of peeing. So that's when cantharis is going to cure the bladder infection. Especially if there's some blood in the urine. Cantharis will be your angel. There may be a kind of heightened sexual desire with this energy state. Okay. Oh, arsenic is a homeopathic remedy. Talk about poisons, right? And arsenicum actually is a very often used in the constitutional cases. It's a very important homeopathic remedy for treating many, many chronic illnesses. But there are certain first aid situations where I would also consider arsenicum, even if there's no indication that it might be the patient's chronic remedy. And the most common situation is actually food poisoning. I don't know why it's not the first thing on there, but oh, it is. Okay. Food poisoning is where I would think of arsenic. You know, your feeling is I've been poisoned, basically. And the history, of course, of arsenic in human culture is to use as a poison. Very interesting that that's when we would consider it as a remedy for food poisoning. So you're traveling in Mexico, you eat something, your salad, you haven't been washed, and you end up feeling, you know, you get the runs and cramps, and you're totally prostrated, can't move. Arsenic will probably bring you, the remedy arsenic will probably bring you back. And some other characteristics of arsenicum is that there is anxiety. It's not the same intense anxiety as aconitum. It's not like I'm going to die tonight, but there's a lot of restlessness, a lot of anxiety with some clinging, not a desire not to be left alone. Usually there's thirst for sips of hot drinks, usually worse in the middle of the night, in the early hours of the night, of the morning. So I want to go to the daisy. So this is the daisy, Bellis perennis, is in the same family of plants as our very first family, Arnica. So it's the current botanical name now for this family is the Asteraceae. And it turns out that all of the Asteraceae, when we turn them into remedies, they seem to be great remedies for injuries. And with Bellis, just like Arnica, Bellis perennis is a great remedy for acute trauma. And the thing that distinguishes Bellis perennis from Arnica is that it seems to have a specificity or an affinity to the inner organs, especially the organs of the pelvis, the groin, and the breasts. So if that's where there's been an injury, I would consider getting Bellis perennis before trying that first before Arnica. It also has, and there are many people who don't particularly want to bathe in a cold shower, but with Bellis perennis, it becomes very, very prominent. I wanted to talk not only about Bellis perennis, but going back again to Arnica, because both of these remedies are really helpful if you or a loved one is having surgery. Arnica is a fantastic help for people both if you give Arnica right before and right after, as soon as you can after surgery, it will really speed up the recovery, will really help their recovery so much, especially if they're having, say, orthopedic surgery, where the surgeons are really, you know, hammering, using saws and all kinds of heavy sort of tools on the bones. Normal human reaction to that is to feel incredibly sore. So giving Arnica in a situation like that can speed up the recovery a great deal. If, on the contrary, the surgery, say, has been a hysterectomy or a removal of a breast mass, then I would give Bellis perennis. So poison oak, rostox, is a great first aid remedy. And it's a great remedy. I use it the most in first aid situations when there's a sprain, especially an ankle sprain. So say somebody sprains their ankle, they take Arnica, and it seems to help, but a few days later the Arnica doesn't seem to be helping anymore and they're still having pain and stiffness, then rustox is the next remedy to give. And what really tells us that rustox is needed is the strength of the symptom of stiffness. And there's this sort of rusty hinge phenomenon when rustox is needed or when it works the best. That is that there's pain on the first motion when, say, you have a sprained ankle and you get up and that first step, it feels so painful and stiff. But then as you start walking, it sort of loosens up and the stiffness gets better. And then if you keep walking 100 yards or more, then it starts to hurt again. This is exactly the scenario where rustox will really speed up the healing a great deal. And you can see there's some other indicators there for rustox. People who need it really are affected by the cold and the damp.
So could that be like, I'm an electrician, and when I'm working on industrial jobs, sometimes I do a lot of wrenching, and my hands will swell, and sometimes I'll get trigger finger or things like that. But it, like you just said, it's horrible first thing in the morning, and then when I'm back at work and moving again, it gets a little bit better. But as soon as I stop, it sets right back in.
Take rest time. Take a 30C, see how it works, and let me know. Send me an email.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of situation with rustox.
Why would it work for poison ivy but not for poison oak?
No, it can work for either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a great remedy for cellulitis and infection of the skin. It has a lot of itching. Like, you know, it feels like poison ivy, poison oak. Oh, just a few more minutes left. Ruta, Ruta Grave is a great remedy when there's an injury to the periosteum. As you may know, the periosteum is the lining of the bone. So you bang your shin on something really hard, and that bone really feels sore and injured. There, Ruta is waiting to help you. It also seems to be a great remedy from eye strain, for eye strain, or repetitive stress injuries such as carpal tunnel or bursitis. Since we have just, well, let's see how much. Okay, I guess we have time to cover Bryonia. Bryonia is a really great remedy. I consider Bryonia such a good friend. Arnica and aconite are remedies when, in the first few hours, right after, within, you know, right away, when someone is in an acute trauma or stress, you know, remedies like apis or arnica or aconitum are going to be the first remedies you think of. If someone has been developing some kind of illness for several hours, or a day, 4 hours or 24 hours, so it's past the acute stage, but they're getting sicker and sicker, Bryonia is one of the remedies that I would consider. And some of the sort of personality pattern characteristics that are important in Bryonia, they're really important and they're very reliable, is that the patient does not want to move at all. We talked about the arnica patient not wanting to move, but in Bryonia, it's really strong. They want to be left alone. They don't want to change their position. And they're quite irritable. And just one case, this was actually in a little village in the Dominican Republic where I was visiting with my daughter many years ago. And I was asked to help with a woman who was having a severe periodontal abscess. I examined her mouth. She had this huge swelling sort of around her gum and in her cheek. And she had a high fever. And she didn't want to move. She just was sort of lying in one position. She had a lot of thirst. And the other thing was that she was a hairstylist. It was an odd thing, because this was this very poor little village near the border with Haiti, and that was her living, though. She was a hairstylist, a hairdresser, and everybody in this village came to her. And the thing about it, the biggest concern she had because of her sickness was that she wanted to get back to work. And this is another, I don't have that great, that's another characteristic of Bryonia, is they're very focused on their business and continuing to work. So although Bryonia isn't necessarily a remedy I can think of for dental abscesses, all of these characteristics made the picture of Bryonia really clear. And within, you know, within an hour or two of Bryonia, she recovered. And the next day she was back at work and incredibly grateful. And it was just recognizing these particular personality characteristics that she had in this Bryonia situation that was able to allow me to give her this remedy, this curative remedy.
Are you saying the abscess went away?
Yeah, the abscess went away. I stayed in that village for a good 8-9 days, and she was completely free of the abscess. So, what potency should I use? We talked a little bit about this. I would recommend, if you're new to homeopathy and you want to get a kit, I would recommend a 30C kit, because you're not going to do any harm with a 30C. It's going to touch many first aid situations. You can always repeat it often. You know, for a few remedies, you might want to have higher potencies on hand. So for example, arnica. It's nice to have a 200C, which is the next step up, or even a 1M. So say you come across someone who's really been injured, their head injured. You know, they're in a near coma or in a coma. You know, you want to be able to match the intensity of the situation and the reaction to it with the intensity of the remedy.
What's the shelf time or expiration time for many of these?
Great question. These remedies last forever. Just don't expose them to this kind of heat.
You can't give somebody an oral remedy that they're unconscious.
Can you?
Yeah, you can. You can dissolve in a little bit of water and just squirt a little bit under their tongue. Just a few drops. Yes?
Would the dosage depend on the size of the person? Or
no.
Is that not as irrelevant?
No. As a matter of fact, infants, because their vital force is so strong, generally respond to higher potencies. That's a great question. Young children, generally, the vital force is so strong, I generally go with stronger potencies, maybe a 1M in a first aid situation, rather than with an adult where I might go with a 30C. Great question. So I think that is it. Oh, just going over a little bit. There are different potency scales in homeopathy, and I'm not going to bore you with a lot of information on this. But if you use, I would recommend using a C scale for emergency first aid situation. And again, 30C, a great intermediate potency to use. 200C when you're a little bit more confident that this is the remedy that's needed, and maybe their intensity of the situation is a little bit more. 1M and 10M for really high intensity kinds of situations. Again,
would 7 tablets of 30C be approximately equivalent to 200C?
Oh, thank you for asking that. No. Not at all.
It's not mathematical.
It's not mathematical at all. So you could give a whole bottle of 30C and it really has just about the same effect as if you were to give 3 pounds. So don't waste it that way. Hmm. If you need a higher potency, you need a higher potency.
You said for an infant they might want to do a 1M?
Yes.
What does the C stand for?
It stands for 100. So we talked a little bit about how remedies are made. So the C means that the original substance has been mixed one part substance to 99 parts of lactose, and then ground in a mortar and pestle for 1 hour. That is a 1C potency. After 3 hours of repetitive dilution and mixing, you get a 3C potency. At that point, one part of that substance is mixed with 99 parts of water, actually 20% ethyl alcohol, but that's a detail that's not so important. 99 parts water. And then it's shaken like this. It's, we call it succussion. After 1 hour of that, you get a 4C. You take one drop of that, mix it with 99 drops of water, do this again for another hour, you get a 5C. So that gives you a sense. The more you do that, the more you amplify the signal of the spirit of the remedy. So you get higher and higher potencies by amplifying the signal. People who enjoy making fun of homeopathy, which is fun to do, will talk about how it's crazy because you're getting less and less every time you dilute it, right? And actually, after you do this about 7 or 8 or 9 times, if you're a mathematician, you'll figure out that by Avogadro's rule, you don't have a single molecule left of the substance. So, but homeopaths know this. It's not that we don't know this math, but paradoxically, somehow the signal, the spirit of the substance is still amplified even when there's no molecule of the original substance left in the remedy. So, but anyway, so that's where the C comes from in the centesimal scale. In the decimal scale, you can probably guess the way that those remedies are prepared is one part of the substance is mixed with 9 parts of milk sugar and then 9 parts of water. So then you have a decimal scale as you go up. And those remedies, as you go up the potency scale, they're not as potent as the C potency because somehow the spirit of a substance needs more diluent, more water, to kind of express itself. So I tend to avoid the decimal scale. I like the centesimal scale better, and most homeopaths will prefer to use the centesimal scale as opposed to the decimal scale. And then there's also what's called the LM, which actually stands for 50 millesimal. It's also in Europe more properly called the Q scale. And actually that's what these remedies are, 50 millesimal scale. And these tend to be actually more used in chronic illness. You probably won't. They can work in emergency situations.
So how do they relate to the C scale?
It's a little bit more complex. An LM, a rough comparison is that, let's see, an L-